Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
Episode 90.
All I want to know is, I want to just apologize because the summer has gotten away from us. We've had so much fun, and we know that we got to get back after it. We got to get back after it. But I'm excited. This is Dr. Payray and myself catching up on life while we enjoy a cold beer and Jack and Diet here at Double Dogs.
Jack and Coke. Jack and Coke.
No diet. Dude, what's good?
Man, a lot of things has been going on around here. I mean, I've been doing from the lab journey that I started, creating a whole lab, tearing up the operatories and building a lab, to understanding, oh my God, the business of lab and how much things and expenses and there's just all the logistics of it. I didn't really think about all of that. I just kind of went with it because
But
then it's also making me understand and value so much of what lab people do. So what I'm right now doing, I think this is so helping me to become a better dentist in terms of retro, like finding out my errors of what I'm not communicating with lab. So like, for example, I take today's patient. Coming in, we're doing a full mouth rehab on top with a bunch of implants and crowns, but we're keeping her teeth. It's not all on four. So what we do is take a bite, do a wax up, and then I'm trying to open her up. So I'm putting a leaf gauge, seeing how much do I like to show. And then taking that back. So normally, what do? I send it to the lab. I'm like, give me a wax up.
Make them look pretty.
Now, I'm taking it back and I'm like, Lexi, show me what's your steps. And then she shows me one step, two step. And then I now, for example, wax drawings for all on four or dentures or removable, because we are on such a nice routine. So like my bite rims, I need to set everything so perfectly because when I do the wax drawing, like right now, I don't even have to do the second wax drawing because the first wax drawing, it's kind of perfect. And that truly is going in. And then again, at the end of the day, I am also dealing with the financial side of it. So it may be also kind of where it's not too something easy to fantasize about. But mostly, more importantly, I feel like in a clinical world, it's going to help me 10 times to be able to be a better dentist because I have now so many different solutions to fix them, even temporize them, you know?
No, I totally get
you've
that.
Been doing this for so long, though. Like, right after school, you had that whole luxury.
And Sarac was definitely... I don't know anything I've said about Sarac from the beginning. Whether you like Sarac or hate Sarac, it doesn't matter. What it does do, I think, is it makes you a better dentist because you start to learn a little bit of the lab side. So, okay, well, then I kind of want to interview a little bit on this. So let's jump back. You're now in what year of your practice? It's third year of your practice. Mm-hmm. You started January of 2017. Somewhere
pretty much,
there.
Yeah.
Okay. So third year of your practice. And then you were super successful last year. I mean, good first year, but last year was great. Everything was going good. When you look back, what do you think was some of the best decisions that you made to help you have early success
in this practice or in general? Then, like,
just in general, like, and you being successful with this practice, what do you think were the key markers that made you go from startup to in 1 year collecting over $1 million?
The first year, yeah, and then the second year. So the thing, well, I guess the way that I can say what helped me the most was try to be on top of things. Like, don't let it. Just don't wing it. I guess, like,
my guess is it's on some level, you being almost a clinical expert in a lot of things made your life a lot easier because you were only having to really you were good at dentistry. So instead of having to focus on the business aspect and the clinical aspect, a lot of your focus then just was on the business aspect.
Yeah, that's actually very true because what happened when I first built, I saw like so much money that are not being collected because of all the like I don't have that all that business stuff on the platform to where these patients have to do this first, then they do this next, then they do that, then I do the surgery. Before it was just like, okay, how much? Let's go and do it. And not know that if the front person has already collected or insurance going to pay and a lot of those things. So I think part of my growth honestly has been the being able to have my team very close to me, because everybody who was at the course last month, we did the or I guess this month, a couple of weeks ago, where everybody come to me and say, gosh, I love your team. We and that's
which is crazy because like yeah. Even a year ago you were
I didn't have anybody
yeah you basically like tried was, to you're yeah. piecemeal people together
exactly. So I think as soon as if I were a new dentist or anybody listening to this and thinking that it's just you and even though you want to do this and that and this, like there's so much more than you and you have to start being more of a leader and taking charge. So like staying after hours doing a lot of things and not expect your assistants to do those because I'm just paying you. So I think...
So a lot of it is probably your own maturity on some level right, as a yeah. business owner.
Yeah. So I think partially it's more like quit delegating things unless you know so much about the job. For example, a lot of things at the beginning I started delegating because I was lazy, not wanting to learn the skills and everything in the business realm. And what happened is the same thing that I was delegating was what was hurting me. So it almost like it goes back to the quote where the only things that you learn... You don't want to do certain stuff, and those are the same thing that kind of gets you to grow faster, like the things that you don't really want to do. For example, what I really didn't want to do is to worry about the business side of dentistry. And I was like, man, I just want to do the dentistry. But when you open your own private practice and you're just kind of try to say that I don't want to learn the business, that's kind of like you're just winging it. You're very much, you got to
either
be lucky.
Right. Or something like that, yeah.
So much you got to know about. But at the end of the day, also, I should say this, that I think the nature of the way that I look at patients when they walk in to where I diagnose everything I see. I'm not afraid of presenting $30,000, $20,000 worth of money. And I think a lot of doctors are scared of that, but not because they don't want to tell the patient. It's just that I think they're not able to put their mind and wrap it around how am I going to expect them to pay this much? What am I going to do to get there? So I think part of it was also clinical that I think like when the patient come in, I'll be able to give them the exact price. This is how much can you finance or let's move forward very quickly.
What I think there's a misconception because I think a lot of people, they just assume that, you know, we present this treatment and they say yes. What they don't see is that like, you know,
how many of them say no?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Like that was the point I was trying to make is like we may present 10 people 10 $40,000 treatment plans and two may say yes, or one may say yes to that and one may say yes to a $20,000 treatment plan. You know, so part of it is you got to have enough shots to make something sometimes.
Yeah, well also, I want to mention this because we had them in our podcast Crabtree Group because they've been with me since May. One thing that I didn't know was that telephone conversation at the beginning. Like, who do you want to come and you want to meet? Like, for example, we went from 90 new patient consults to now 33. Like, it's dropped.
Which is a good thing.
But guess what? I'm working less. I'm seeing less patients. But my money has actually went up.
Because they're more qualified?
They're more qualified. So talk about me. Like, if you can talk or walk, just come on in. We'll get you all on
board. Yeah.
But then now, like, I can't spend an hour and a half showing the smile design. The patient doesn't have $600.
Right.
And I used to be thinking, oh, I'm going to convince them. Because I did. Like, you know how I had some cases that they went and that kind of showed me, like, encouraged me to the bad behavior. Like, oh, but honestly,
some people don't have the money.
And then if you, it all also depends on what kind of practice do you want to have. Like, the demographic, the people. Who do you want to attract people to? What kind of dentistry do you want to do? And it's kind of hard for me. And I love your input in this because you have a lot more experience in the general dentistry side of seeing how insurance work and being with that. And so tell me, some of the people that look at mine and be like, well, you do implants, that's why you have more money and it's easy. But what about somebody that doesn't have the implant skills but still want to open a practice and be successful doing general dentistry, bread and butter, until they get to a point where now I master this, I want to do more implants and full arch.
I mean, I think it's the same thing. I think it's I think it's the challenge is one, we only can treat what we know how to treat.
Right.
So we have to be able to, you have to have a level of education where you've done a quoist or a spear or something like that that allows you to see more dentistry.
Meaning, and then once, spend money on CEs.
Right, yeah. And then once you can see more dentistry, you have to learn how to present more dentistry. And so, like, when you and I see a patient, like, we could take one patient, right? And if we had, like, a first-year out of dental school guy, first guy or girl look at them, they may diagnose, like, crumb crowns, fillings, etc. But we may immediately say, oh, my gosh, all the teeth are in the wrong position.
Right.
We got to do this.
Where's the lip line? What's the transition line? What's the restorative space?
Different.
There's so much more.
Because of the CE we've taken, right, and that sort of thing. So I think where a big portion of whether it's successful or of what any type of industry you do is, and I can say it this way, give patients the opportunity to say yes to the best. Right. You know, and once you start, like, that's been a huge thing in my growth over the past year is trying to not care more than the patient cares, because that's a challenge too. Sometimes I want to force my,
right, yeah,
my will or what I yeah want or what I think they should do
burned
on the patient, right? Let them own their dentistry. And when you give patients the opportunity to say yes to the best, you'll be shocked at how many will choose that. But yeah, they just, because, and the other aspect of that is, I think, having, T-Bone calls it firm financial arrangements. You know, just being firm financial arrangements, being so clear on the front end what something costs and giving them a way to make it affordable. You know, whether that's payment plans, Care Credit, Green Sky, Proceed, in-office financing, whatever it is. But, you know, dentistry is expensive and a lot of people can't afford $10,000 up front, but a lot of people can afford, you know, $500 a month.
$300 a month.
Sure.
I mean, how many times do you know, like, you go out, and this is funny because it's so true, people don't think, people buy things emotionally.
Exactly. They buy what they want.
And if you can make it like, hey, this is going to cost about $300 a month, can you do that?
Dude, that's like a nice dinner and like a couple nights at the bar.
And how much money, and they're going to be like, okay, what's the total? Like, I don't even tell them to tell the total. Like, that's how I've been learned and trained by Cameron and them. You don't tell total because you don't go to Mercedes-Benz. They're not going to say $87,000. You want cash, right, check, or card. They're going to be like $495 because that's how people buy things. 70, 80% of people buy things on credit.
Yeah. You'll appreciate
and
this.
If, go ahead.
T-Bone,
yeah,
last year, they were doing Invisalign. Yeah. And they did like 25 cases for the year. They were charging $4,000. He changed his payment for 2019. So instead of saying it was $4,500 or $4,000 to 9 payments of $500, which is more money, $4,500, and they'll do over 45 this year. So by the same thing, by going from okay, it's $4,000 to 9 payments of $500 by raising his fee, but breaking it out.
So what if they don't come back?
Well, in that case, it's Invisalign. So like, that's the beauty of it, is they're going to come back because the treatment's going to at least probably take that much time. So that, like, in like adult ortho, it's a no-brainer.
No, meaning they stop making payments and they don't show up.
Well, yeah, but then they wouldn't have the rest of their trays.
Right, because you don't give them all the way.
So
once.
A lot of,
yeah,
the stuff we can do,
that's true,
if it's dentistry that we know that it's going to be a while.
Yeah, no, that's good.
You can drag it out, right?
So because people are thinking about, like, for example, hybrid.
Yeah,
right.
You could,
like,
drag that out for 18
months
if you needed to.
Yeah, because you're thinking about, like, putting temporaries on them, like PMMA, all on X, PMMA, and then wait till they have the money for the full arch. And then if they break, then you pay to re-scan it.
Do another PMMA.
No problem. Because there's no denture needs to be done or any wax up. So going back to the tipping point, started from me joining a corporate practice that had lab built in.
So you missed it.
From that, yes. So when I opened my own office, the one thing that I wish that I had was having a lab technician in the house, because it was so good to communicate with somebody who is on the other side making these teeth and then bringing that emotional side to the lab too. That was amazing. So what I thought about doing was, like, why can I recreate this in a private world? How much is it going to cost? So I talked to my accountant. I showed them the numbers. And they looked at my last year's numbers and how much I spent and then the financing and how much it would be. And they're like, it's no brainer. And when they said that, because I have like 3-4 people that look at all these tax reductions and all the different, like Cambridge and all the other folks. So they're like, that makes sense. So then in March or April, I pulled the plug on one of the better systems that I like Zircon's on. And it's the most high, like I love it just because it's so accurate, the precision and everything. However, the learning curve is what I've been struggling with. And that's something that I like to mention because I was just talking to another doctor earlier, called the office and asked about how my experience with Zircon's on. And I was like, if you don't have somebody that could dedicate 24 hours, like you need to have somebody knows the machine.
At first, you were going to hire us. You were going to have your assistant do it.
Right. Because I was like, oh, my assistant can do it. Because she can do like, I mean, retrofit a denture or do like pick up immediate load prosthetics. But then when I started learning, oh my God, this is a whole another entity. I need hydrocolloid machine. I need it. Like we ran so many electricals. It pretty much costs a lot of money. However, I look back and I'm now in about, say, May, June. June is when I actually got the machine, about 3-4 months now. And I'm now able to kind of do PMMAs, a lot of temporaries, because I don't want to put people in the finals unless I'm happy with their temps. Now that it costs so little to do temps.
You could do that easily, yeah.
So easily. And then if it breaks,
mill another one.
Now, that's the luxury of having the lab tech. Then I saw how much things cost and how much I'm paying. For example, I'll get abutment, implant abutment crown back at $400 a piece. And I'm like, it's two teeth and it's 800, right? Then I'm like, tie bases shouldn't cost more than 100, 120. And that's tie bases, stock abutment. If you do custom abutment with this, like pretty much what I'm looking at is so much cheaper if you have a good lab technician that could help you. But at the same time, it's also going back to, you can delegate that to, because that's also, I've got burned too. Because in a lab world, there's a lot of lab technicians that say that we could do this, and we could do that, and we could do this. But then once you start seeing their work and what they're capable of, it's just like dental assistants, that some of them that they might have done it for 20 years. But guess what? 20 years now with this type of machine and everything doesn't mean anything, right?
So how did you go about that process then? So you bring in, so before, prior to the lab thing, how many team members do you have?
So prior to team member, I mean, prior to lab, I had about nine.
Break that down really quick.
So I have three people in the front, two people that answer the phone, one person for just new patient coordinator. So any new patient calls, go to Bibi. She answers all the front person, like anybody that has new patient. She's the new patient coordinator. Second person in the front, she answers all of our existing patients, everything else. So like the patient calls the office, if you're a new patient, press one, that goes to Bibi. If you're an existing patient, press two, that goes to Miranda. Miranda answers the phone, she gets all the existing patient taken care of. Third person is my insurance coordinator. Even though I have only 16% general dentistry at the office, which is crazy to think about, but at the same time, like 16% plus, I don't know how much hygiene, I think it's 10-12%. I'm pretty much right now at 76% of what I'm doing. And about 80-90% of what I'm doing is surgery. Right. So 70, think about it, 70-some percent. And I guess I'm counting pros too, though. See, that's not just surgery. I'm also getting paid for my pros work, like all on X.
Right.
Doing the pros,
right,
I'm getting paid.
You're doing both of it, yeah.
So then the third person does the insurance. That's three people. Then I have a dental assistant, chairside, Gladys, and then Christine. And I had another one, which I'm right now hiring. So that's six. Then I had my, that's pretty much it, right? But six. How did I say nine? Oh, because I counted the lab too.
Before the lab. Six.
Six.
Three plus, front office and three back
office. Because Shane was mostly not from My New Smile. He's just doing the social media stuff.
Right. So then you bring on the lab, and who's the first person you hire once you bring on all that?
So before I call the lab, what do? I call the office, TCAT, Tennessee College of Applied Technology, to ask the teacher, like, hey, do you have any good tech people that I could write? Yeah, somebody young. So I got the person in, one of them, and he started working, and he's very fresh. So now I'm doing the most advanced things in dentistry, and yet I hired somebody brand new, somebody out of school. So guess what? Either I'm going to do all the lab work and teach him, or am I going to wing it and delegate that to somebody who I thought would be a trainer and then come and do it. So the trainer came in, spent ton of money, Then I realized the trainer might not know everything about the system.
Sure.
So what happened was I stopped doing the training. So like I called the person again, the teacher at the school. I said, who else do you have in the school that knows a little bit about dentistry? So then I got Lexi. Lexi, who was actually at the course, she is also young, 22 years old, but she knows A to Z of dentures and analog world. So then I'm like, why don't I put her in charge of all my hybrids, all my dentures, all my everything? Then once I get her to where she can give me the wax drawings and everything perfect, then I can send that to Zirconzon and get the PMMA milled. Because what I need right now is somebody to be able to do stack porcelain and do finals. Because I'm not going to put something in my mouth unless I know this has been greatly done. And I don't want to just have them to be like keep breaking. Because Zirconzon pucks are also not cheap.
Right.
Their pucks are like $400 or $500.
So yeah, you don't want to be wasting much of pucks either.
So like you could just literally, if you want to try and do some pucks, it might as well be better to just send it out. Because you're going to get it cheaper if you get it out.
Right.
So anyways, lab business has been a little bit harder than I thought. And that's because I thought I could get somebody who knows this deal and I delegate it. But with everything that I've done in life, I feel like if I don't learn it myself and do it, then I'm not going to get to where I want to be. So I'm right now at the verge of coming in Saturday, Sunday, just like I've been doing every weekend if I'm in town, and learning, scanning and doing the things on the computer and designing. So like what you saw just a minute ago, like a PMMA. So I'm learning like how do you manipulate? Let's cut it back. Let's do this. Let's do that. And that is helping me learn. But ultimately, I'm actually looking for the third lab person in the lab to help me to get these more zirconia.
It seems like you're making you're getting close to getting over the hump though, because
I hope.
Because like,
I mean,
well,
I'm hoping to by January
like,
I'll have somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you were, you know, just walking in there the other day when I came by the course, and then today, like, it looks like things are starting to move along.
Because
better on that.
For example, Lexi, who just joined me, she has been able to help me so much because she worked at a corporate world and did a lot of dentures.
Yeah.
And no, it wasn't affordable dentures, but she worked. But yet she came in and she was like, oh, why don't we do it this way? So she built that whole lab in the back. So sometimes a lot of doctors get lucky. Me, I personally feel like I got so lucky with getting Lexi. And she's been able to help me doing all of these removable stuff where I don't have to send it out anymore. And the patient is going to get it so much faster. Because next thing I want to teach Lexi is that somebody who is completely analog, I'm teaching her to be digital. Let's scan and let's print.
Yeah, there's no reason that we can't just start, you know, printing a lot of these interim things.
But yeah, the lab business, because there was two things that I wanted to do. Two things that this year I had to do, but I couldn't do both at the same time. I picked the lab over the second thing, which I didn't mention, and that was going to be the general dentistry side. So my main struggle this year was like, hey, how can I just step aside from the office and make sure the office is still running? Because if I'm doing 85%, 80% and over, and if I'm not working, that means the office is suffering. So how could I get a general dentist in there and start like, so I have two general dentists, but it's not the way that it need be. You know, like what you already know, I need to get somebody who is going to be full time and dedicated. So then I looked at whenever the opportunity came along to see, do you want to pick general dentistry and grow that, or do you want to pick lab and grow that? So I picked, I'm selfish.
Sure, I get that.
And I picked the lab because guess what? I want to be able to have a lab tech and be able to do a lot of this stuff. General dentistry suffers, so be it. What do I do to challenge that? Start teaching.
Yeah, because then you're going
to
recruit.
Now I can at least make a little bit of money to pay the general dentist, keep the general dentistry going, because ultimately I'm just breaking even, maybe less in the general side. Because of how much I'm like the hygiene, the payroll.
Right. AKA all you podcaster listeners out there that want to come and be a general dentist and work for Dr. Payray.
Yeah, man, I'm down. I mean, anybody, like, see, that's a good question because a lot of these younger dentists also, as soon as they start, because they heard a lot of podcasts, they want to do things, but they are very, very aggressive in terms of asking for things before they actually prove themselves.
Oh, totally, yeah.
So they come into a practice and they've heard all these great podcasters saying, hell, you got to ask for this, you got to ask for that. But if you really think about it, at the end of the day, there are two things that these general dentists that get out of school that could do. One, follow the norm, which is, I think right now, the norm is becoming part of corporate.
We agree. Totally
working
agree.
There.
Yep.
Two, risk it and go with a private dentist that is going to help you, mentor you, get you, AKA later on, maybe a partner, but have it in writing. Like meaning you're going to work for 3 years.
I am.
So I think a lot of doctors, that younger doctors especially, the first thing they want to do when they're looking for a job is asking how much and what's the benefits and things like that. When I worked,
it's the intangibles that are way more valuable.
Exactly.
Who's going to mentor you?
Who's
going to
mentor you? Because that connection or the network and things that even later on. So it's hard to tell, and it's because some of these doctors have to also pay $400,000 worth of debt. So then, are they going to be thinking about who's going to mentor them or intangible things, or are they going to worry about their kid eating dinner and food and their wife? So now let's go.
I don't think it has
corporate.
To be separate, though. I think it can be both. I mean, I think you can find. I'd be totally willing to, like, we're going to hire an associate probably in the next year or so. And I think that, you know, we'll find a very good base salary that's going to let them not stress and at the same time be mentored and taught, and then the potential to earn a lot more money. And you just got to, look beyond that first. I mean, you got to look down. I mean, it's
you
small
have to
minded
have a
to look
wider
all,
vision.
Yeah, exactly.
A wider vision with plans.
I mean,
we weren't just thinking about spending
all this money on CE and shit like that. I mean, we were.
Yeah.
It was a much bigger view of what we're doing. You know.
I mean, you're getting that role and like that motto of like, I need to do this. I need to, like, I told people some of these tips and tricks that we're throwing a lot of tips and tricks. I feel like one thing I also did that helped me a lot is having plan for year by year by year. So
yeah,
like,
that's good.
I'm going to master perio, for example. Tissue grafting and things like that, 6 months, the first half of this year.
Yep.
Who can I take courses? Let's do that.
That's mapping your CE journey.
Right. So like,
yeah.
I kind of mapped it out where, let's see, I graduated and I realized I don't know shit. So then let me learn this stuff by teaching myself and going to these courses, because I'm tired of going to residency where they're like, oh, this you can do, but that one don't touch. This one you can do, but like, I don't tell me that. Tell me why.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with
you. So the whys are why I paid all the money. On top of the corporate also sponsored some of these courses at the beginning, for sure.
So now you're moving along. I do think it's a good idea to focus to work on the general dentistry aspect, because I think that one aspect, I think,
like,
that,
what is the marketing? What do you get people in? Like, what are the ways to get general dentistry?
It's if you
active?
Build it, you will come. I mean, on some level, part of it is you. What my guess is, what you don't have right now is a general dentist who's motivated and wants to grow his own practice. They want things
right
fed to them, which is
right.
a challenge, you know. But I think getting the right person in there, it'll somewhat build itself. I mean, I just think it's important, because what is kind of the, to me, somewhat of the writing on the wall is, since we've graduated, we've lived in an unbelievably fruitful time, you know, where people are spending money. Credit's easy to come by. There's a lot of money. But like, what happens when the market starts to reset? Oh, that looks delicious. And all of a sudden, people aren't getting these loans. They don't have the money. And
yes, thank you very much.
Were
I'll take a jack.
Willing to spend a lot more money, they're no longer doing it. Does that make sense?
No, it does. Honestly, it does make sense.
Let's hear about the course. You just had your first course.
The course was... I couldn't
ask for
more.
I was so stoked about it.
Yeah, I was very, very speechless when it came to. It's funny how I went about it. I announced it, and then I had the registration open in a few days. So I made some announcement, and then registration opens at 9 o'clock. So at 9 o'clock, I had a consult. I go in, and I come back around 9:03, 9:04. Like before 9, I went into the room. I came back, and I'm like asking Shane, "Have you sold anybody? Have you anybody?" And he's like, "Dude, the website crashed. The Eventbrite crashed. Like, you couldn't even look at it." So then, yeah, which I realized, yeah, in a minute and a half, it was sold. And that made me so much more even motivated to, like, let me come up with this great curriculum that whoever comes to this course gives them from start to finish, A to Z's of all on X's. I'm talking marketing. I'm talking personal, the financial arrangement, treatment acceptance, the team network, and how you're going to build this, how you're going to pay for it, how are they going to, like, all of those. So I brought my team in, and that's part of the thing that everybody loved, because they saw the team being so active, and that's the good thing. And I'm very lucky to have that because they motivate me even harder. So then we had that to start. Then I had Dr. Bosma, a great friend of mine, UAB professor, associate professor. He's a prosthodontist and a periodontist.
Boss,
and so
yep.
I said, shout man, he this guy knows all the academic and the university stuff. So let me get him to teach some of the logistics and the millimeters and the space and all that. So we put together a greater PowerPoint where people can go back from this and schedule a case and start cranking 20 grand cases and start to finish. So, and then on the second, so the first day we had hands-on, they would do it on skull, like with all, so I put 4 implants, angulating them. And then we made a guide for them so they could see their angulation. But also we made a denture for the same person. So now they have to go lunch and come back and pick it up. So then they pretty much walk them through the whole.
Which I love that because that's always like, that's a challenge like that no one ever thinks about is like, where do you learn to like go pick up a denture?
Right.
You know?
And those are the things that we practice on. We went and troubleshoot. Then we closed the first day with just a little bit of treatment acceptance. How do we get these patients in and how do we talk to them? So I had a consultant group to come talk. Crabtree, they were there. Then the second day we went into, in the morning, which I love the topic of complications of All-on-X, because whenever you start doing All-on-X, if you're not ready for complication, then you might not as well. Right. So I have done my share of having complications. I don't know if I should say it, fortunate enough, when I first started working at the corporate, I saw so much All-on-X failures that now looking at a patient, guess what? I'm over-engineering the heck out of that thing because I'm not going to misdiagnose. So complication, 2 hours in the morning, we went over. And then this is the best part of the course. The second day was how I had a real life patient from surgery and extraction, the videos, to next step, next appointment, post-op, next appointment, taking impression, next appointment, wax trying.
So literally a nice global view workflow.
Whole view of this patient going from start to finish. What do I use? Faceful. How do I transfer teeth? What are the numbers? What are the parameters? And then guess what? I'll give them that same patient. They're watching them live. So it's because you can either show them 20 cases or you can show one person or two people and walk them through. Because those are, and then very detailed. So I show them the 6 appointments, 7 appointments, whatever it takes. And then the fun part was the live surgery, the icing.
How did it go, by the way?
It was actually, I couldn't ask for a better patient. Oh my God.
Sedation was good.
Everything felt like right in. So we put in 6 implants instead of like, so that's another thing. I did it all on
X. I won't always be like that.
I know. And like everybody was like, man, this is so smooth because. I mean, I had at the end of the day, I had a great patient. I want to say shout out to Brian. He did a great job. And it's funny because people are like, did you charge him? I'm like, hell yeah, I charged him. But I gave him a discount, of course.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we did a lower jaw. All on X doesn't mean that, or all on 4 doesn't mean that 4 implants. For this patient, Bruxer grinder, guess what? I'm putting 6. If I could put more, I would put more. But 6 were enough for him. And then immediately load the denture, which I have a surprise later on coming on how to make this so much easier to where you don't have to spend 20, 30, 40 minutes. You can do it so much quicker and pick up a denture. So a lot of the doctors that haven't done these, they're like, oh my God, I don't need a lab tech to come do this for me because I can pick it up, which I was showing you the acrylic pickup. So all of that I'll go over later. But yeah, man, I was very blessed, truly blessed to be a part of that.
Dude,
and to
I'm
be able
so
to do that.
Dad went. Dad loved it.
I know. Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
Awesome.
That's definitely
he had a great time. Shout out to Daniel and Neodent who sponsored the course. Man, they paid $4,200 for dinner the night before.
Good for them, man. That's awesome.
Like, dang.
It's nice to have good support like that.
So let me turn this conversation.
And we have to remember that too, because as much as us millennials are always about like cheaper, faster, Amazon this, you know, whatever that, we have to understand that like it is awesome having good support from reps and manufacturers. And not even if you're just speaking, but even like in day to day, how critical those people have been that like you just can't overlook that.
No. No.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.